It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to the Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Or on Twitter, you can chime in at hashtag Giants Chat. Good morning, everybody. John Schmelk with you. The New York Giants getting ready for the start of free agency, which gets going over the weekend. You can begin negotiating with other teams' players. And a very exciting time for the Giants as they really try to rebuild this roster heading in to 2014. And, you know, taking a look at Kevin Gilbride's comments last night, I'm sure you saw him in the newspaper, in the Post, in the Daily News this morning. And, look, you can be a little upset about, you know, some of the shots he took. And, you know, obviously he's not happy with some of the things that were said about his offense. But I think the point that you take out of it is that there were personnel issues. And he knew it, and everybody on offense knew it, especially on the offensive line. And that's what's going to have to change here moving forward if the Giants are going to want to get better. So I'm going to try to take a bigger look at the big picture free agency situation over the course of this morning's show. You know, for the first time since the new collective bargaining agreement got signed a couple of years ago, the salary cap went up substantially this year to $133 million. No one seems to understand why. Next year, when the TV money kicks in, they think it could go as high as $145 million. And Pro Football Talk said this morning in 2016 it could be as high as $160 million. But other people say it'll be closer to $155 million. Whatever the case might be, the salary cap is going up. More and more money is getting infused into the NFL business. And teams will start spending. But, and I'm going to talk to Jason Cole, from the National Football Post, formerly of Yahoo Sports, in about 10 minutes. And we're going to talk to Jason about how much he thinks this market's going to get inflated because of all the extra money that teams have to throw around in this free agency process. So we'll talk to Jason about that. But, and I think that's something that Giant fans have to keep in mind here as free agency begins over the weekend, the negotiating period, and then, of course, on Tuesday, free agency itself starts on the 11th. And I think the key thing that Giant fans have to worry about, very simply, is that the guys that get signed early here are going to get overpaid, and potentially overpaid substantially. I promise you there are going to be some contracts in this free agency period where you're going to scratch your head and you're going to say, wow, how the hell did that guy get that kind of money? But when you have that amount of money floating around in free agency, that's what's going to happen. I equate it to when, you know, somebody gets a nice little bonus at work, an unexpected bonus. Let's say you get an extra $500 in your check. You know, what is somebody going to do with that $500? Are you going to be responsible and put it into the bank? Yeah, some people might. But I think you're looking at 75 to 80% of the population's going to take that $500 and go buy themselves an Xbox One. They're going to go buy themselves a PS4. They're going to go and get the new rims on the car. You're going to go out there and buy the brand new suit. Nice tie. Look sharp. You're going to take that money and you're going to go and you're going to use it. You're going to buy something new and fancy that's exciting. And I think that's what you're going to see in free agency. You're going to see a lot of teams trying to go out there, use that cash, and buy something new, exciting, and fancy. And I think that's what a big part of the early portions of the NFL free agency period is going to be. And the Giants, I believe, might go after and get one guy in the early part of free agency. You know, go spend a little bit more than maybe what the guy might be worth. but I wouldn't expect more than a couple of signings in that regard. I really wouldn't. I don't think it makes a lot of sense. I would think the Giants would probably wait, except for maybe that one splash guy, maybe on the offensive line, will wait till that second phase of free agency to do the rest of their work. Because as much money as the Giants have under the cap, other teams have a ton more. And I mean a lot more. I mean, you take a look at some of these numbers for some of these teams. I mean, and I'm trying to bring up the list here. I mean, teams like the Raiders have almost $60 million of cap space. A team like the Browns have cap space in the 40s. Other teams are in the 30s. So there are a lot of teams here with a ton of money to spend. So I'm not sure how much the Giants at $19 million, and you know, they can get up to 25, maybe close to 30 if they do everything they possibly can to, you know, settle everything down. But the way I see it, the Giants are probably going to wait till that second phase of free agency. I know that might annoy some people, but I think it'll be interesting to see exactly where the Giants decide to make that splash. I think it's going to be in the offensive line. I think there's a potential that the first guy signed could be a running back. I think those will be your first two priorities. And I think you go from there. And I was talking about the salary cap space. Right now, the Giants come in around 19. Now, this article was posted back in February before the cap was extended. So these numbers aren't great. But the Jaguars are in the 50s, the Raiders in the 60s, the Browns around 50. The Colts, the Dolphins have a ton of cap space. The Packers actually have close to $40 million of cap space this year. The Vikings and the Bengals are both in the 30s. So there are a lot of teams with a lot of money to spend. And frankly, I think this offseason, I think if the cap goes up as much as people say it's going to go up over the next couple of days, in my opinion, the next 3 years, you're going to have a lot of inflated contracts that will probably wind up with guys getting cut sooner rather than later. So teams would be wise to lock up some of their long-term, you know, players now. But, you know, for a Prince Amukamara, for a Jason Pierre-Paul, the Giants might have to pay out, you know, pay up a little bit next year. You know, other teams in the division are going to have the same problem. The Cowboys have Dez Bryant and Tyron Smith coming up next couple years. Now, they can franchise those guys to make it a little bit easier, but it's a problem. So with this added money all into the pot, teams are going to, you know, have a lot more to spend and going to be a lot more aggressive in free agency when the time comes. 201-939-4513, that's our phone number. We're probably going to start taking calls around like 10 o'clock or so, because we'll be joined in a minute by Jason Cole from the National Football Post, formerly of Yahoo Sports, and we are going to get his take on what free agency is going to look like this year, who some of the big people are going to be, and what positions he thinks are going to get the most value in free agency this year. And we'll ask specifically about some of the Giant free agents and where Jason thinks they might land, and quite frankly, almost as important, where their money is going to wind up, so the Giants can figure out exactly who they can fit into their budget in 2014. You can also chime in if you have a specific question for Jason Cole. You can send it in to hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We will take your questions there. And if I have the opportunity before we say goodbye to Jason, I will ask him those questions. We'll get Jason up in just a second. But I will go through some of your comments on hashtag Giants Chat as well. Bone Marrow Blue, other teams have more cap space because they don't have a franchise quarterback to pay. And that's true. I mean, you look at all those teams that I listed. What do they all have in common? All those teams don't have a franchise quarterback. So, yeah, when you have to spend a lot of money on a quarterback, guess what? It's going to be tough to sign up the players. You know what the trick is, though? The teams that have those franchise quarterbacks are the ones that actually win. So, obviously, you pay a premium for the position, but you need a premium player at that position if you want to get better. James Smith, what are the rules of the cap? What percentage do you have to spend, or does what you don't spend get rolled over into the next year? There is a salary cap floor. I'd have to check to see what the number is. I think it's somewhere around, last year I think it was around $100 million or so. So I know some teams rolled upwards of 10 to 15, I think even $20 million from last year's cap into this one in money they did not spend. So that is something you can do moving forward. But there is a salary cap floor, that is correct. So a lot of teams will have to spend money this year, even if they don't necessarily want to, which I think is interesting as we move forward. Let me see if I can find that number for you, exactly what it is. NFLcommunications.com has it? All right, we'll check that out. And we'll see if we can get that information up for you. But, yeah, so teams, like I said, there's going to be a lot of teams that have a lot of money to spend, and they are going to spend it. So let's see. The salary cap officially set at $133 million. We know that. Let's see. We don't know where this has there, Mr. Salomon. What do you got here? Right there? Okay, here we go. Let's see. That means they also probably set the salary cap floor, which I'm looking for now. Obviously, teams have the franchise tag. They have the transition player. Let's see. What is the salary cap floor for the teams this year? I can't find it. It's like a three-page document. I got to go through this whole thing. I'll try to find this over the course of the show, folks. But there is a salary cap floor that teams have to hit as they combine their salary. So that's something to keep in mind moving forward here. But the Giants, like I said, they're going to have a lot of work to do. A lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball that are their own free agents, the Justin Tucks of the world, the John Beasons of the world, even in the secondary, Tremaine McBride, Terrell Thomas, guys like that. The Giants have a lot of work to do there, but I think on offense what they're going to do, they're going to try to bring in guys from the outside. And unfortunately, as I've mentioned since the start of the show, they're going to have to spend money to do it with all that extra money being on the salary cap this season. So I think it'll be a lot of work for the Giants, and they're going to have to figure it out. We should be joined by Jason Cole in just a second. And when he joins us, we'll get an overview of free agency and exactly what's going on with the Giants in terms of that. Just very quickly, in terms of the Giants, and I've gone through this list before, and I'll go through it one more time just to kind of get you ready for this interview with Jason. And I'll ask him about most of these guys specifically after I get through the general NFL stuff, which I think there's some interesting things going on with some of the guys that have been cut and let loose. Lance Moore tweeted this morning that it was great to be a Saint, so he was let go. Not surprising considering they signed Marcus Colson to that big money contract. Weems was their big-time wide receiver last year that they drafted. He had a big year, so they think he's part of their future. Not Weems. The Saints' first-round pick last year that ended up, or third-round pick last year that ended up playing decent minutes and getting a lot of receptions. I can't remember his name. It starts with a W. But the Saints are pretty stacked there at wide receivers, so they let Lance Moore go. And they try to figure out going forward where they can, you know, spend their money. And we always talk about this with the New York Giants. And Kenny Stills, that's the guy I was thinking of, sorry. And much like the Giants, all these other teams, sometimes you have to let good players go in order to improve elsewhere. And it's about value as much as it is talent. You have to pay these guys a certain amount of money to fit them under the cap so their value is commensurate to their contract, and what you put on the field is a good product. That really is the key here for these NFL teams in free agency as they move ahead and try to figure out exactly who their target should be, how to best fill out a complete roster. And that's really the trick for the Giants this year. It's filling out a complete roster. You have a bunch of guys that you think could be a good fit, but are they a good fit at that number? Is it something the Giants really need? These are all things, you know, you have to consider as you move forward here with the New York Football Giants. But That's why on defense they'll probably have to let Linval Joseph go. It's going to be tough to pay a defensive tackle that much money when you already have a very effective Cullen Jenkins and used a second-round pick on Jonathan Hankins. You could probably get just as much value, or even if you're getting 75% of the value out of Jonathan Hankins, you're paying him a fifth of what you'd have to pay Linval Joseph. So, you know, those are decisions the Giants are going to have to make as they move forward here in free agency. And the same thing on offense. They have so many holes. I'm not sure you can pay Akeem Nicks the type of premium that he should get and likely get in free agency. And that's one of the guys we'll talk about with Jason Cole from the National Football Post. He joins us on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Jason, what's going on? How are you? Good to hear from you.
I am good. Good to be here. And what's going on with you?
Nothing much. Well, let's talk about free agency. Obviously, this is the first year since the old CBA that the salary cap has gone significantly higher from year to year, each team getting an extra $10 million to spend. Or for a team like the Cowboys, $10 million less that they have to cut and guys they already have on their contract. How much do you think spending is going to be inflated this season as compared to past years since the salary cap has gone up so much?
Well, I mean, look, there's going to be some level of inflation. There's no doubt about that. And it has to happen because you're not just talking about this year is going to go up, but over the next 2 years, you're going to see significant increases because the TV money has gotten so much better. So, you know, good for the NFL. Everybody's doing much, much better on this one. So there's going to have to be an adjustment. You know, what I'm sort of worried about is if people remember back in 2006, there was a large increase in the cap, and all of a sudden a lot of sort of mid and level players got paid significant amounts of money. And then 2 years later, those same players, I mean, guys like Derek Dockery.
They all got cut.
Remember, he got, yeah, I mean, what happens is that, you know, they got, you know, $7 million a year. 2 years later, teams realized, well, I can get a guy who's as good as Derek Dockery in probably the third to the fifth round. Why am I paying this guy $7 million a year? And that was the impetus for owners to eventually force the union to go back to the table. And so it's good, you know, it's good for the players when salaries go up. The question is, where are the adjustments going to be made? And how is the market going to respond? I mean, this is a really complicated discussion about salaries. But what if the players are eventually smart about this, what they will do is say, look, let's increase the minimum salaries so that everybody across the board is making a lot more money. Like, you know, make minimum salaries closer to $1 million a year and make that the same for everybody, whether you're a first-year player, whether you're a sixth-year player. If you're playing on the minimum, you're playing for $1 million a year or 1.2 or whatever it is.
Right.
That way you distribute the money across and there's not this big gap. So I think that there's going to be inflation, just like you talked to. I think there's going to be a ripple effect to that inflation. And that's the really critical issue along the way.
Well, and I think it also impacts then how these players are going to end up negotiating these contracts with these owners. I mean, we see a lot of contracts signed now, Jason. We're joined by Jason Cole from the National Football Post. I mean, I think the contract the Cowboys signed Sean Lee to was a perfect example just over a year ago, where they had a couple years at the end of that contract with almost no salary dedicated to it, just so they could push salary back when they had to renegotiate his contract at a later date. So it's not necessarily the length in total dollars in these deals. It more has to do with how much guaranteed money these players are going to get when they sign these contracts.
Well, and also the form of guaranteed money. Because one of the things, the other things that people need to understand in this is there's a minimum spending requirement of 89%, but it's a rolling minimum, okay? So, like, over a four-year period of time, if the cap goes, you know, if teams, for example, have to spend, let's just pick an arbitrary number, $500 million over a four-year period of time, and that's actually a little bit low, but just say $500 million, for example, you have to spend at least 89% of that. And then league-wide, you know, take that $500 million times 32 teams, the league itself has to spend 95%. So, are you writing it as a big upfront check that gets spent in the first year of that contract, like 2014, or are you doing it in base salaries that get distributed over 14, 15, and 16? this is why, you know, contracts are going to be really interesting to see how teams do it and see how they spend. And I'm fascinated because this is going to be a real change in how the league does business over a long period of time. And so I'm really intrigued by this year because this has never really happened, along with the fact that you're going to have this big increase in the amount that a lot of players make, you know, 10 to 15% increases across the board. And, you know, premium players, because there are very few of those guys in free agency, are probably going to command some very large salaries. And the question is it going to be very large in terms of the signing bonus, or is it going to be very large in terms of the base salary year over year?
And there are teams too, Jason, and the Bengals are always one of these teams who come in under the cap. The Jaguars have come in under the cap. I mean, these teams are going to have to make up some ground. Some teams carried over, you know, $15, $20 million from last year's salary cap, which adds to the number this year. So a lot of these teams are going to have to catch up. And if they don't want any, you know, long-term expenditures hurting their flexibility in later years, I guess that would likely take the form in a lot of ways in one-year signing bonuses, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating, especially for the low-end teams, how are they going to spend? Because what's relevant now, the cap is no longer relevant. The floor is what's relevant.
Interesting.
Okay, for most teams. Now, everybody, like, focuses on Dallas. Like, you bring Dallas because, obviously, a couple of reasons. That's one of the Giants' main opponents, and they're consistently over the cap. Steelers are the same way. But if you look at the vast majority of the NFL right now, most teams are sitting with 15, 20, upwards of 30, and in the case of the Raiders, $60 million in cap room.
Yeah.
They're not worried about the high end. Like, they're not worried about, you know, $133 million. They're worried about the low end. How do I spend all of this money just to get to the low end?
That is one hell of a problem to have, huh?
It is, but it also speaks to the fact that the cap, the upper end of the cap, is no longer relevant. It's the lower end of the cap, you know, the floor, as we say, that's become the relevant issue. And you really have to follow salaries in the league for a long period of time. If you go back to 2006, and you go back and you look at the big spike in the cap that year, all of a sudden a small number of players start making these huge contracts. And then 2 years later, a small number of sort of middling-level players started to get cut. And the league itself realized, why are we spending all this money on all these players who are mediocre? We're going to, you know, go back to the table and fight to take money off of the table because we can't, you know, it's hurting our books. And we're overpaying on these guys, and we don't feel like we have to pay them because they'll play for a lot less than we're paying them. And so the ultimate ripple effect of huge spikes in the cap hurt the players. And I know that sounds weird, but it did, because what the union didn't do and it's not doing now is they did not increase the minimum. Okay, what the union really needs to do is increase minimum pay for guys in the first, second, third, fourth years, and all the way up through, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth years in the league. It should be a much higher, you know, flat minimum for all of those guys.
We're joined by Jason Cole, national football writer for the National Football Post. Does an excellent job. Jason, let's talk about some of the specific aspects of this year's free agency class. Obviously, the first couple days of free agency, heck, usually you get the rumored deals on, you know, a couple days before the official signing period starts. Who do you think are going to be those big splash guys this year that come out early, get those big money contracts that teams are going to target and they're going to want to get as soon as possible?
Well, this is a big year for offensive linemen. Obviously, you've got three or four left tackles out there on the market. You got Velder, you got Brandon Albert, you got Eugene Monroe.
Yep.
The center, you know, the center Alex Mack out of Cleveland. Those are the guys who are going to get a ton of money, and deservedly so, because there are so many teams that need offensive linemen right now, and again, have so much money. The Dolphins have somewhere in the area of $30 million left. You know, we talked about the Raiders with their $60 million, and they need three offensive linemen. So those guys are going to really cash in. And if they don't really cash in, you have to sort of wonder what's going on with the system. So offensive line, and offensive line this year, those guys are going to really cash in. Even though in the first round this year, there's probably four or five offensive tackles in the first round this year are pretty good players. They're still going to be paying those veteran guys.
Where do you think the top wide receiver is going to fall out here? Do you think Decker gets the biggest contract? And I've gotten a lot of different answers on this question. I'll ask you it as well. Where do you think Akeem Nix's contract is going to land and the chances that he returns to the Giants?
I think it's a very low chance that he returns to the Giants because I don't think the Giants at this point trust him.
Right.
After everything that they've gone through with him. And, you know, they don't trust him on a couple of levels. So you're going to show up, number one. Number two, are you going to be healthy? And, which is even more important than number one. You know, are we going to see you on the field, you know, time after time? And so I think that Hakeem Nix has really hurt himself this last year with how he's handled his, you know, his negotiations, changing agents at the last minute. That's another bad sign for them. So I think that they're going to let him walk unless the price is really, really cheap. I mean, he's worth, you know, when Hakeem Nix is right and everything is good in his game, you know, you're talking about a guy who has $10 million a year ability, maybe
no question.
$12 million
yep.
a year ability. But based on what his performance has been the last couple of years, you know, you're talking 6 to 8. You know, that's probably what it is. And so teams are more likely, even though Eric Decker doesn't have the same ability as Akeem Nix, people know what they're going to get with Eric Decker.
Right.
And they know, okay, if I find this guy, he's going to show up week after week after week, and he's going to play. So I'm safer taking a guy like Eric Decker than I am paying a guy like Akeem Nix. So that's why I think ultimately Decker's probably going to do better than Nix.
One other group I think is pretty deep and interesting, and these are the guys that have to cover those talented wide receivers, is the cornerback position. A lot of guys really out there in that mid-level group. How quickly do you think these corners are going to go off the market, and where do you think you're going to find some bargains at the cornerback position, which is usually a position that's very tough to find bargains in?
Look, the problem with it is the supreme guy in this market is Aqib Talib. Teams, despite what he's done the last couple of years in New England, sort of cleaned up to that, people don't trust him yet. So when that's the top end of your spectrum, and you know, Grimes has already come off of the board. Who's the other kid? I'm trying to remember who got signed the last couple of days.
Yeah, I don't remember the quarter, but another guy that a lot of people are very interested in is Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. He's a guy that a lot of people are going to want to pay, I think.
Right, but there's faults in Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie's game,
sure.
too, in that he's a smaller guy. You know, he was a better tackler this year, but not a great one. And he's really, really quick. But he's the kind of guy, if he loses a step, and you know, he's getting to that point of his career where he's going to start to lose a little bit of his quickness, and he was banged up a lot of last year. So all of a sudden, he's not as great as you would think he would be. And he had a very rough time when he was in Philadelphia. I mean, he just really doesn't tackle very consistently. And so it could be a guy that you spend a lot of money on who's all of a sudden off of your team again in 2 or 3 years if he loses any of that quickness. So I think there's trouble with the top end. I expect the cornerback market is going to come in flat again and not be nearly what it should be because people don't trust that group, and you're going to have a lot of guys who are in that bargain range of, say, $5 to $7 million per year. Just like last year, the top end guys weren't making much more than $5 million a year. I mean, Talib got five. Some other guys got in the area of, you know, three and a half to five, and that's where the market ended.
Yeah, I think Tim Jennings is the guy I think you're talking about who ended up going back to the Bears. Is that who you meant, Jason?
I think so. It's been a blur of signings the last couple of days, so sometimes I lose track of it. I mean, look, the top guy in the market is Grimes, because he's a guy who plays really, really hard, and he's a guy who people trusted. Okay, he's not as talented as Aqib Talib, but people would rather pay Grimes than they would Talib, because they know if they pay Grimes, he's going to show up. If you pay Talib, the concern is, what is he going to do when he puts the money in his pocket?
two guys specifically, Jason, I want to get your opinion on and where you think they're going to land in terms of cost. Captain Munnerlyn, who was a good slot guy last year for Carolina, and then Sam Shields, who was very physical, a corner for Green Bay. Two guys that are still in the prime years of their career, are free agents, will be looking to get some money. Where do you think they're going to land in terms of salary?
Well, Shields is, I mean, this is a really intriguing one because I thought that the Packers were going to pay Shields. I thought they would put out that number in the area of $8 or $9 million a year. They never got to that point. And when a team like the Packers, they don't pay, that sends a ripple effect along the rest of the league because of the respect that Ted Thompson gets.
Okay.
So I think, you know, I thought Shields was going to have a much bigger market. I think he's going to come in at under $8 million a year. I would be surprised. I thought this was a guy who could touch $10 million a year, and I don't think he's going to get that. He has flashed that kind of ability at times, but, again, teams have a tremendous amount of respect for the number that Ted Thompson puts on a player. And all of a sudden, I think that's going to make people go back and say, okay, is Sam Shields really worth it? Now, if he gets the $10 million a year or slightly north of that, I wouldn't necessarily be shocked, but I'm expecting that the number is now going to come in somewhere around $7 or $8, maybe $9 million a year. Well, there are going to be a bevy of teams that are going to be after him. You can go through, just look at the top end list. You got the Chargers, who've got a ton of money. We talked about the Raiders. Dolphins need a second guy. I don't think they're going to pay two of them, but they could certainly use him. There's going to be a host of teams that are going to be interested in him. With Munnerlyn, you're talking about a guy who I think Carolina realizes we can't afford to pay him the kind of money that he's expecting. I think that he's going to be coming in at about $5 to $6 million a year from what I'm hearing. He's a little bit less of a premium guy because people don't feel like they can play him on the outside as much.
More of a slot guy.
Yeah, I mean, which has value and has tremendous value. But when you can't put a guy out on the edge and expect him to cover – that limits the amount of playing time that he can have. And those guys generally have been coming in at $4 to $5 million a year when they hit the market. You know, guys like Bryce McClain came in at 2 to 3, and he's pretty good at it. So the premium guys come in at 4 to 5. This year, because of the inflation, you might be talking 5 to 6.
Now, one position group, I think, Jason, that has a lot of question marks and the guys that have flashed some talent but never really put everything together is the running back position. You know, there aren't any huge, huge names here. I know some of the guys that I always get asked about here is Rashad Jennings, Ben Tate, LeGarrette Blount. How do you see those three guys specifically and that running back position in general kind of filtering itself out in free agency?
It's a flat position. You know, Tate and Cleveland, that's been considered a marriage. I think it's going to continue to be one, even though they've had the change in the front office. So you could see them coming in and getting him at, say, $4 million a year, maybe, you know, climbs up to $5 depending on the structure of the contract.
Right.
But running backs just don't get paid, and they're not going to anymore because you're splitting time for most of those guys, number one. So really what you're doing is you're allocating, you know, somewhere between $6 and $9 million for the position as a whole, and usually using some younger guy who's under his rookie contract along with an older guy who maybe is making that $5 to $6. If you've got a premium guy like an Adrian Peterson, that changes it a little bit, or, you know, an Arian Foster, but not significantly. You know, there's only three or four exceptions per year at that. In that, it's basically how are you going to spend your resources at running back? Most teams are going to put $5, $6, $7 million in at that position overall. That's why the top guy's probably, unless he's a truly premium guy, is going to come in at about $4 to $5 million per year. I would be shocked if LeGarrette Blount gets north of $3 million.
Right.
And he's a pretty good workhorse back, but yeah, he's never had great success when he gets much beyond 200 carries. So, again, he's a guy that you're going to want to limit the amount that he plays. Rashad Jennings has flashed some, but have been hurt a lot between Jacksonville and Oakland. Again, I'd be shocked if he gets much north of $3 or $4 million per year, even in this expanded cap.
I need to touch on the interior offensive line, Jason, and we're joined by Jason Cole from the National Football Post. You can also follow Jason on Twitter. I believe it's at Jason Phil Cole. Is that correct, Jason?
That is correct.
So check out Jason there. But, Jason, I got to ask you about the interior offensive linemen. You mentioned the tackles, and you mentioned Alex Mack, guys that are really going to get upfront money and big upfront money. But how about the Evan Dietrich Smiths of the world, the Jeff Schwartzes of the world, guys like that? How long do you think they're going to stay out there in free agency? And who do you think really would be a good fit for the Giants considering their budget constraints?
Finding, you know, the budget constraints are going to be interesting because I don't know what's going to come up, going to happen at the low end of that market. So I can't really answer that one, how that's going to sort out.
Okay.
I don't think that Schwartz or Dietrich Smith are going to be affordable for a team that has limited cap. Because, again, those guys are going to come up at $6 or $7 million.
Wow, that much, huh?
I mean, there's just a lot of money floating in the market. I mean, people, you know, everybody's going on last year's prices. Last year's prices doesn't mean anything when you've got a host of teams with 20 to 30 plus million dollars. They got to spend the money. So, you know, what does it matter? I mean, I really believe that those guys will, you know, like the Kelce contract with the Eagles.
Right.
That came in as something of a bargain in my mind.
Yeah. Wow.
The Riley Cooper contract was a little bit of a bargain, but he didn't want to leave Philadelphia. He likes the situation there. I mean, that's $5 million a year for a guy that most people think is a number three receiver. So that's going to have a trickle effect on anybody who can start on the offensive line and play. Teams are going to be desperate to throw to get those guys who are affected. You know, so the two guys you're talking about, Schwartz and Dietrich Smith, yeah, they're $6+ million a year guys. Unless I completely miss what the market's going to look like, that's what I think that they're going to be worth.
Any tight ends besides Jimmy Graham, who obviously has been franchised already, and Dennis Pitta has re-signed? Any tight ends you think out there that might end up being bargains and be better than what their perceived value is? It seems to be a pretty shallow group just by taking a look at some of the names on the top of that list.
Yeah, it is a shallow group. I mean, Carlson's about the best thing that you're getting. There's not much at that position. There are guys who can come in and help. And, you know, the Giants specifically have done a really good job of making that an interchangeable position and recognizing guys that on the cheap can come in and help them right away. You know, whether it's Boss 1 year, Bennett's, the series of guys that they've gone through at that position, they do a pretty good job of identifying it. Now I'm wondering if the loss of Mike Pope is going to have anything to do with that. I'm guessing that probably not, but it's more of a personnel evaluation side of it. But again, I think there's going to be a cheap guy who rolls through there, like Carlson, just like. He's just like Boss, pretty much. He's just an older, more banged-up version of it. So you can sign him for probably $2 million a year if he doesn't get done. I know he was visiting the Cardinals, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yesterday, if I recall that one. So he's going to be a guy who comes in at a relative bargain price, whereas like Graham's untouchable. Nobody.
No.
He's going to re-sign with the Saints. It just depends on what the leverage is going to look like for either side.
All right, final question for Jason Cole from the National Football Post. Jason, I got to get your opinion on what the outside market is out of New York on three guys in the Giants' defense that are free agents this year. I'm talking about John Beeson, who's representing himself, which is another interesting part of that whole equation, Justin Tuck. And, of course, you get to Linval Joseph, the defensive tackle. What do you think the interest is for those teams, for those players, rather, if they hit the open market on March 11th?
Joseph is the most valuable of those because of age.
Yep.
He's got the least loss of tread, I guess. That's a poorly worded sentence. But,
no, I hear
most,
you.
He's got the most tread on his tires. He's a pretty good player. Is that going to come in at 6, or is it going to come in at 7? That's going to be the interesting question. Again, what does the contract look like? Tuck is a guy who I think he's going to be lucky to get a 2-year, $10 million deal if somebody thinks he's got something left. But he's at the stage of his career where it's 1 to 2 year deals.
Okay.
It could be $3 million a year. I've heard everything on Tuck from 2.5 to 3. To some people think he's in the range of 5 a year. And that, again, depends on how much money do they have left and when they bring him in, what do they think. And some of that study was done. And some of that is before a lot of people have really looked at his tape. Some of the GMs that I've talked at said, yeah, I've done some preliminary work on Tuck, but not extensive work on Tuck yet.
Right.
I mean, because they could wait until after. One of the advantages of the way that the combine is run now is you can really focus on the college players and being ready for the college players, and you still got 2 weeks left to focus on your free agent guys. And you know, you don't have to start putting prices on those guys until about the 8th of March. So I would say Tuck is somewhere in that, anywhere from $2.5 to $5 million a year range. And
then finally, John Beeson, who's sending out emails to people saying, hey, send me an email if you want to sign me.
Yeah, that's curious. To me, that smells of two things. Number one, desperation. Number two, a crashed market. I mean, look, linebackers just aren't worth that kind of money, you know, anymore. I mean, he'll be lucky to get 3 a year.
Oh, wow, that little, huh?
I'd be shocked if he got much more than that.
Fair.
So, I mean, again, linebackers become a dime a dozen. They're sort of like fullbacks in this league, especially when they've got some tread on them. So I'd be a little bit surprised if he gets much north of that, especially when he's representing himself. Now, maybe it'll be a higher number in a backloaded contract. Like maybe somebody says, oh, yeah, John, we'll give you a 5-year, $25 million contract, but it's really more like a 3-year, $9 million contract.
Yeah.
Because of the way that it's written. Those are the things that I would watch out for, especially because players don't understand the back end of your contract. Don't count on that.
And especially with a guy like BC, who's not going to have an agent there to explain the details of those finances to him, it could be a deal where he can get sucked into something like that.
Yeah, it's a real danger. I mean, I hear this stuff from players about, oh, you know, you don't need an agent on your rookie contract. You don't need agents. I mean, trust me, you need agents. Trust me. If the NFL paid what was fair, then you wouldn't need agents. But they don't. That's why you need agents who understand the ins and outs of the game and understand the ins and outs of contracts. And it only gets more complicated when you get to be a veteran.
Jason, great conversation. I'd love to talk to you again sometime soon. We appreciate the time this morning. Thanks so much.
No problem. Take care.
And good luck. Good luck handling the rigors of free agency. That's Jason Cole from the National Football Post. An excellent job this morning breaking down free agency. And I don't know, maybe send some shivers down some spines of some Giant fans in regards to where he thinks the market's going to be for offensive linemen, which is exactly what the Giants are in the market for. But I thought a lot of interesting stuff there from Jason Cole from the National Football Post. Let's go to our phones at 201-939-4513 and go to Joe in Pennsylvania first. Joe, what's going on?
Good morning, John. I'm just listening and I'm looking again. I tried to bring this by Paul Patino when he filled in for you a week or so ago. Mm-hmm. I just think the Giants need so much, you know, players like, you know, and you're saying that there's going to be a big turnover. And we have, where's our depth? It's in our defensive line, correct?
Yes.
And safeties, correct?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the two deepest positions on the Giants roster,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the general manager, if I'm playing it. There, I could get on that phone, I would sign, this is me, Lindell Joseph. And then I could easy get a number two for Hankins, or I can get a reserve good young stud center or guard. Them guys don't have a big contract. Why can't they do that? The same with Jernigan.
But here's my question for you, Joe. Why would you – let's say if you play Jonathan Hankins, he's going to give you 80% of the production that Linval Joseph gives you, right? But you only have to pay him 20% of what you got to pay Linval Joseph. Wouldn't you rather have the guy on the bargain than overpay the older player?
Listen, if I sign Joseph, correct?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to get a number two, or I'm going to get a young offensive lineman for him. Anybody would trade for him. He don't have a big contract, nothing. Or I could get a running back from somebody, or anything. You know what I mean? I could trade our safety, that young safety we have, to another team for a running back or something like that, or a draft pick.
But why would you have to go? Why would you want to go out there and find a team to trade you a player when you can just keep the young player on your roster and then use your resources in free agency to find the player at the position you need?
Because you're not going to lose Joseph then, and then you're getting another player of equal quality for like Hankins or Jernigan or that young safety, what's his name, Cooper?
Well, first of all, Jernigan and Cooper Taylor have zero value in the trade market. You're not getting anything for them.
I disagree.
Oh, Joe, you're wrong. Jernigan's been in the league 3 years. He's played two good games in three seasons. You're not getting anything for him in a trade.
Okay, and you wouldn't even get a number three draft pick for him.
For Terrell Jernigan? You're lucky if you get a conditional seven.
Okay, what about Hankins?
I think if you trade Jonathan Hankins, you probably get a three or a four.
Okay, now anybody else on that defensive line we have besides Pierre Paul, maybe I trade that we have under contract. You mean you can't trade one of them guys for quality center or guard, a backup, someone with equal value.
Well,
and
I mean,
we're keeping Joseph.
But the point is you have to find the fit. Why not take the $7 or $8 million you're gonna pay Linval Joseph in free agency and spend that money on an offensive lineman? Why are you going through all these machinations of keeping Joseph then trading Hankins to get an offensive lineman? Just use the money to sign an offensive lineman.
Because you're gonna get something back and you're not for Joseph for whoever you trade and you got Joseph.
But you still have Hankins. You can have Hankins and an offensive lineman that you sign in free agency, or you can have Joseph or an offensive lineman that you traded Hankins for. What's the difference?
I just think we're gonna get nothing back. We're just losing that we're just going to lose Joseph like that, and we get nothing back for him.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call, buddy.
Okay, I guess maybe I'm wrong or seeing it wrong. But
no, Joe,
sometimes it
is okay to agree to disagree, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I just think, you know what I mean, we could keep him, we'd have a quality player, and then we could get a young tackle or guard for Hankins. You know what I mean? And whatever. I just think we'd be stronger that way, but maybe I'm wrong, I guess.
All right, Joe, we'll see. Thank you. You know, in the NFL, it's just tough to trade, too. It just doesn't really work. It's a tough thing to do. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Drew down in Virginia. Drew, what's going on?
Hey, John, good morning. How you doing, man?
Good morning. I'm doing well, Drew.
Good, good. Don't get your blood pressure up, man. Like you said, it's okay to agree to disagree.
I hear you, bro.
speaking of disagreeing, I missed the first half of the show, so I don't know what's going on. But I did want to call it in response to a call you got. I think it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Or the other day regarding Eli by our caller Steve. You know, I'm a big huge Eli fan. And I'm kind of getting tired of, certain people just bashing Eli just because, oh, well, he had a bad year. Yeah, we know Eli had a bad year. He had a real bad year last year. He had a bad year the year before. Yeah, I get it. And, again, you know, this is coming from an Eli fan. But, you know, to sit there and have people call in and say, oh, you know, he's not a leader. And you know he's not a leader. It's ludicrous and it's ridiculous. And if you listen to Tuck, if you listen to Strahan, okay, at times those guys have validated Eli's leadership and toughness. So if Tuck and Eli Strahan is talking about Eli's toughness and readability and his leadership, then that's good enough for me.
Yeah, Drew, I'll say this. I don't think there's anything wrong with Eli Manning in terms of intangibles, you know, in terms of a guy in the locker room, in terms of a leader, in terms of a guy that does all his work off the field, in terms of toughness. I think he has all of those things in spades. Now,
exactly.
if you want to take some fair shots at him, that look, maybe he makes some bad decisions sometimes. Maybe he's not the most accurate quarterback from game to game or the most consistent. I think those can be fair criticisms.
Right.
But,
I'll agree with that, John. Okay, we have no agreement. In fact, let me say something right now real quick, because this has been, you know, and I've heard you say that, and this is my opinion. This is what me and you is going to disagree. We'll talk about Rams as Barton, okay, in that Eagles game. All right, I'm a huge Eli fan, love Eli and everything else, and to this day and forever, I'll always blame that loss on Eli, not Ramses Barton. If Eli doesn't throw that ball, Ramses Barton doesn't pick up the offensive pass interference, which was a BS call, but that's a different thing. That loss strictly belongs to Eli. I don't care what nobody say, that play strictly belongs to Eli, not Ramses Barton. So, you know, so I'm going to call it like it is what I'm saying. That said, Eli's the one thing that I really like about Eli, and this is what I want to say. The one thing that I really, really like about Eli, okay, is he's a competitor. You can clearly see that. And to me, this is where I really, really, really became an Eli fan. I think it was in his rookie year, you know, when he started. You know, we was going through all of these games and all of these losses. But one thing that I saw about Eli is he never really quit. And then the game that, to me, that really solidified, I think it was the first game Eli won, is it was against Dallas, I believe. And he drove the team to a come-from-behind win to beat Dallas. And when he did that, that was like, man, we got us a good quarterback. You know, because you get your quarterback that has this knack about coming from behind, winning the game. You got a good quarterback. And that's what Eli is. We've seen it time and time again. The other thing about Eli, which does frustrate a lot of fans, me included, okay, is Eli's a gunslinger. And once again, it goes back to his competitiveness. He's a highly competitive guy. And honestly, in a funny kind of way, I don't really think the interceptions is really bothering Eli as much as we might think. I mean, no, don't get me wrong, okay? He's cost the team some losses, and I know he's sitting back like, maybe I shouldn't have did this. But my point is this. Eli's not afraid to try to make a play if he needs to make a play.
That is true. All right, Drew, okay. Thanks for the call, bud.
So that's what I wanted to say.
All right, buddy, sounds good.
Later.
And the call Drew's talking about yesterday, Steve called up, wanted Eli to take a pay cut, and you know, we went through all the reasons why that's just not going to happen, because players don't take pay cuts unless they believe the team will legitimately cut him. And that's really the game of chicken being played down in Dallas right now. And I forgot to ask Jason Cole about this. I should have. I totally forgot. Between the Dallas Cowboys and DeMarcus Ware. Will DeMarcus Ware take a pay cut? And if the Cowboys do cut him, does Ware think he can get similar money out in the open market? Those are great questions. I don't have the answer to it. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone and say what's up to Bill in Dallas. Bill, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, John. How you doing?
What's up, Bill?
Hey, you know what? I really love your show. It's a breath of fresh air out here in Indian country.
I appreciate it, Bill. What's going on?
Hey, listen, I only got one thing I want to say is that I was looking at the tweets as I'm listening to you guys, and I see this thing from Jerry Dyke about Andre Brown. You know, he gives us three games. He's back on the IR list. And I agree with this guy. And you know what, John? I'm hearing offensive guys and this and that, but I think we need a couple of really good running backs, because Wilson, to me, he's quick, but every time I watched him run, he just couldn't seem to break away from those big defensive guys, you know. So do we have anybody, practice squad, anybody that we could bring up?
Well, Bill, honestly, I don't think there's anybody in-house to fill the type of role you're talking about, but one thing I think Giant fans can feel a little bit better about from what Jason Cole said, is that you should be able to get a pretty decent running back on the market this year for, you know, $3-4 million, whether it's Rashad Jennings, whether it's a Ben Tate, you know, somebody like that, that you can find somebody, a veteran on the free agent market that you can bring in, that you can hand the ball, you know, 14 to 16 times a game, and, you know, he'll be good. He's not going to be dynamic. He's not going to be great, but you would hope, unlike Andre Brown, he can actually stay on the field.
Yeah, and my other point of that is, when we got a good running back there, and the Giants have always had really good big running backs, and, you know, when we got somebody that's good and that can at least get past the line of scrimmage, it does take a little pressure off of Eli.
No, look, it does. You know, there isn't any question about it. Bill, we appreciate the call, man.
Thank you, John.
Hey, have a good one. And look, you have to get better on the running game. You got to become a more balanced offense again. If you listen to Ben McAdoo's interview with Bob Popovich, which, by the way, you can find on Giants.com, he made the point that, look, you have to have a balanced offense, and the running backs need to pass protect. So all very important things. You know, next week I think might be a little rough. You know, free agency is going to start on Tuesday, and I have a feeling a lot of Giant fans are going to be getting a lot of little restless that their team's not doing anything. So, you know, I'm not sure you're going to get that splash thing in the first day or two, but we'll see. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what's up?
Nothing. How are you?
I'm good, Tim.
I got a question. Will the Giants be signing John Beeson before free agency begins on March 11th? They're negotiating it.
Well, you know what, Tim? That's actually a great question, and I thought what Jason said about John Beeson was interesting. And, you know, he seemed to think that Beeson's mass email out to NFL GMs that was widely reported was almost an act of desperation. He kind of laughed about it. And he doesn't think on the open market Beeson's getting much more than three, you know, at most $4 million a year. So, quite frankly, I think if that's the case, the Giants will wind up with him regardless. But here's the thing. If the Giants are on the same page as Jason Cole was, who joined us in the National Football Post, then John Beeson's probably only going to get, you know, they're only going to offer him $3 million a year. I bet you John Beeson thinks he can get more than that in the open market, so he's going to at least want to go out there and test it. So I'm sure the Giants would want to have him back at that price, but I my guess is that Beeson's going to try to want to get more in the open market. Whether or not he gets it is another question. And again, you know, we talked about it, you know, it was a 7-minute conversation, I'm sure bored the hell out of some people, but keep in mind, that salary floor is important, and teams that have all this money under the cap are going to have to get to that salary floor and over 4 years spend 89% of the cap. They're going to have to get there, which means they're going to have to spend money. Will Beeson be one of those guys that gets the money because teams have to spend? Who are going to be those guys? It's interesting. 201-939-4513. Eric's in Pennsylvania next. Eric, good morning.
How's it going?
Doing well, Eric. What's on your mind?
Looking forward to spring here. Hey, Jerry Reese had made the point that the Giants are going to get younger as a team. That usually is a buzzword for draft. It looks like, obviously, that the offensive line is the key position of need, and it's also very possible that the two best offensive linemen, Matthews and the other man's name escapes me, are going to be gone by 12. Supposedly, the offensive linemen are very deep in this year's draft.
Well, from what I've seen, there's a good chance the third best tackle, Terrell Lewan, could be there at 12, which isn't that big of a drop down from the Matthews and the Robinsons.
Mm-hmm. I had heard that they have quality depth, that first, or let's say second round talent is going to be available all the way down into the fourth round. Is there a player that is not an offensive lineman that is in a key position like a corner or running back or wide receiver that if it should drop down, they would still be able to get real quality in rounds 2, 3, and 4?
I think there are going to be a lot of very good wide receivers going in round 2. I think you can get a quality wide receiver in the second round. I think you're in the second round, you're right on that edge with the last really good starting quality tight ends, you know, the Nicholases of the world. I think you're going to be right on the edge there in round number 2 with tight end. Corners, you could definitely get a good corner in round 2. The corner position is also pretty deep in this class, and so is offensive linemen. So that's why I think the Giants have a lot of freedom here to really choose who they think is truly the best available player in round 1, because you're going to be able to fill some of those holes in round 2, and even at least in terms of the offensive line, you're going to be able to fill that in round 3 as well.
Also, the expression is that you build lines from the inside out. I haven't heard a whole lot of talk about center. Is there anybody? Are there any centers that are so good that they would be worth a first or a second round pick?
You know what? I don't have the list in front of me. I was going through the centers yesterday. I think there's only one center that's supposed to go in the first two rounds, and he's a second round pick. I want to say his last name is Morris or Turner. I'll look that up, but there's only really one true center that's supposed to be a guy that goes in round 2. So the center position is actually one of the spots that isn't very deep, but you can find some good guards and some good tackles in rounds 2 and 3.
So would that be a free agent, maybe a sighting there instead of draft?
I would think so. I think that makes a lot of sense. It depends how expensive the center will be in free agency. And, of course, there's always the option that you bring David Boss back. Now, I don't think you can hand him the starting job considering his injury history and say go run with it, but I think he's an option in terms of depth.
The other thing is, too, is they gave Beattie all the money. I mean, we're basically from the same town, so I'd like to see a local boy make good, but still. But they're pretty much set at tackles for starters, either due to money or draft.
Right.
You don't hear too much about the guards in terms of, and people are saying, you know, you go with a first, second round pick, maybe even a third for tackles, but you don't spend those kind of picks on guards.
Well, usually interior linemen will not get picked until the second round. Now, last year, since it was a very weak draft, you know, it was different. You had a couple guards and centers go in the first round, which doesn't happen all that often. I think this year their first guard will probably go early, mid-second round, the Yankees of the world. And those guys do go less in free agency, too. That's why a lot of fans think if you draft Luan in the first round to tackle, you can move Pugh inside. A lot of people think he could be a very effective guard. I don't see the need to move Pugh. That's just me. I thought he played a very good right tackle last year, but that is certainly an option on the table for the Giants.
So they're thinking about that. The other thing, too, is it seems like the Giants, especially at running back, due to injury, lacked a lot of depth last year. I mean, they were almost sunning people out of the stands as it came out, you know, end of the season. Is free agency a better tool for depth?
I mean, I think you could do it both ways, to be quite honest with you. I mean, the problem with running backs that you draft is that if he's not going to be a primary ball carrier, you need him to protect the quarterback, catch balls out of the backfield, things of that nature. And that, I think, are the things that running backs out of college struggle with the most. So I think if you're looking for depth and guys that can come in and protect Eli and hold on to the football, catch balls out of the backfield, do all those little things, I think you're better off finding a guy in free agency than getting somebody in the draft.
Yeah, I just have fond memories of them bringing in Otis Anderson in free agency and the job that he did.
No, I hear you. I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Eric. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Stay on the phone. Steve's in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's going on, pal? Have you calmed down a little bit from yesterday?
Man, listen, first of all, let me just say this, John. You got to give me a minute to, you know, address all this Twitter hate and Twitter gangsters and all this reckless talk on Twitter. Man, I'm a bunch of haters. So let me just say this. First and foremost, you don't have to agree with anything I say, but you need to understand this. I love my New York football Giants.
And that's, no one doubts that, Steve.
That includes Eli Manning, okay? But what people don't realize is this. I put a value on every single position according to the scheme, what's needed, and on the team as far as what places, you know, what positions we need to address, the whole nine yards, and the value of the player within the scheme. And, okay, the way our scheme is set up, you know, we have to spend big money on the offensive line. We need, you know, obviously to protect Eli. So his resume for itself speaks for itself. So, I mean, he's a two-time Super Bowl MVP. So I don't hate the guy by any means or any other player. I got love for all my players because I love the Giants. But right now, you know, we're having cap issues and there's other things we need to get. So that's why I'm saying Eli should, you know, we should reduce because, number one, we have to spend so much money in order for him to be able to function within our offense. I just don't put that much value on the position. It's not Eli. It's the position and the scheme we run. If he was a Kaepernick or a Russell Wilson, somebody who was making plays on his own where we didn't have to have a super beefy offensive line, I wouldn't be making that point. But if you look at the two Super Bowls we had a top five offensive line each in both of those two Super Bowl victories. And that's what we need. We got to spend money.
Now, Steve, I hear you. I hear you. But in terms of the way the NFL works, it's impossible to deny. I mean, look at the contracts that Peyton Manning signed. Look at the contracts that Tom Brady signed. Even putting those top-tier guys aside, if you don't want to put Eli and God on those levels, I understand that. You know, look at Tony Romo's contract. Look at Jay Cutler's contract.
Look at Joe Flacco's contract. I agree with you on that yesterday, John. You made a very good point, and I understand why you broke it down. So I said just not extend him. I agree with you. We shouldn't cut the man's money at this point. First of all, I don't really like cutting anybody's money. I think a contract should be a contract. I don't think with these guys not having guaranteed contracts, I'm the last person to say we should cut anybody's money who's under contract. But the thing is this, I just don't want to extend them at this point. Number one, we really can't afford to make that kind of risk because, we got to really see how the next couple years plays out. But the fact of the matter is, you know, as far as his leadership, I believe he does all the things, you know, as far as meeting with the players and, you know, and putting the extra film work in and, you know, and even passes and so forth. But I'm just talking about as far as a rah-rah thing, which I don't think we necessarily need on the offense. I think it's always come really from our running game and it should be our offensive line. You know, I really don't have a problem with Eli. I just think that the position is not really yielding the value that we need it to right now. So it's not Eli personally. It's just that we're spending $20 million and we're having to spend so much other money in order to get that $20 million to function correctly. So I do understand, you know, why the point about not, you know, changing or to ask him to take a pay cut at this point. But, you know, I just don't really want to keep defending, you know, because like I said, I got love for the guy. You know, I don't hate any of the players, you know. I just don't think that we're getting a $20 million worth of value out of him right now. And it's hurting
fair.
The team.
What, no, Steve, that's fair.
You know, but I just wanted to comment on Kevin Gilbride's comment because I thought it was funny when I
read it. Real quick, said, Steve.
Okay, 24 years and hasn't figured it out. Well, that's just laughable to me because we all know we could predict the plays that he was running before. And it seems like the only people who hadn't figured it out were the receivers in the offense. So anyway, you know, interesting comments. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what we do in the future. So keep the hate mail coming, guys, but keep it respectful. You don't have to agree with me. You know, keep it respectful, man. I'm a gentleman, man. I'm too old for that foolishness, especially on Twitter.
So, all right, Steve. Appreciate
anyway, John,
it.
Appreciate it. Have a great one, man.
All the love, man. Have a great weekend, all right, Steve.
All right,
thanks.
All right, you too, buddy. Thanks.
Oh, man. The drama of hashtag Giants chat. We love it. Love it. And, you know, to a point, look, I really don't think it was a situation last year where people figured out Gilbride's offense. I mean, he's right. He was running the same offense here for, you know, 10 years. What, in year 9, people figured out all of a sudden? It was talent. You know me. I've been consistent on that from the beginning, though. 201-939-4513. All right, here's the deal, folks. I got 4 people on the line, full phones. I need to be out of here in about 10 minutes to go do a couple, make a couple phone calls for work. So we're going to try to get you 4 guys in the next 10 to 12 minutes, and then we're going to say goodbye, okay? So we're going to start with Charles in North Carolina. Charles, what's going on, pal?
Hey, nothing much, man. Your last caller, man, that dude. Let me say this. He's wrong on a few different levels. No hate, not hating on him or anything like that. Eli is definitely worth the money that we're paying him. It's not – we don't even know. He says, well, for the scheme we run, we don't know what the scheme – is going
to
be.
Though, Charles, in fairness, I don't think Eli played up to the standards of a $20 million quarterback last year. Now, it's not all his fault because he's not getting any help, but I think that is a fair statement to make.
I think what Gilbride said yesterday answers everything that you're saying in the last call said. You know, this team really just didn't have a talent around Eli for him to be productive. As long as he can still make all the throws and can still make all the reads, we need to be patient with what we're saying about, hey, he doesn't deserve the $20 million or he's not playing up to this ability. We need to wait until we see how this offense goes this year. As far as extending them, you know, if it's going to free up some cap and help bring in more talent, I say I think that at this point you can still do that with him because, again, as long as he can still make all the throws, he's still a very good leader, and he's a veteran. He's a franchise quarterback. I think he still make that decision and extend him out. I wouldn't be mad at that. Real quick on John Beason. My only thing about John Beason at this point is what we talked about yesterday, John, as far as, you know, John, I think the Giants' pick right now is still Ebron, the tight end from North Carolina. But I think if John Beason was somehow to go to another team, which I hope it doesn't happen, but if he was to sign with another team, I think that pick changes probably to C.J. Mosley or someone like that, you know, a linebacker, because that's going to be the most pressing need, I think, if Beason does sign with another team. What you think about that?
I think if Beason's not here, I think you have to add at least one linebacker, if not two, either in free agency in the draft, Charles. I don't disagree. Thanks for the call, bud. Take it easy, man. And look, Charles is right. If you lose Beason, linebacker becomes a priority. But I think you can find somebody to replace Beason. Now, maybe he won't give you all that leadership and intangibles that Beason will give you. He might give you the same type of on-the-field production. But, again, I just think he was a great fit here. He fit into the locker room. Sometimes, maybe this way, if a player finds the right fit on a team, sometimes he's worth more than what his actual physical attributes are, and I think that was the case with Beeson last year. Let's go to Rolando in Fresh Meadows. Rolando, good morning.
Hey, Johnny boy, how you doing?
Doing all right, Ro. What's going on?
Okay, bro. I agree with you on so many levels I can't even begin. First and foremost, priority number one is going to be the offensive line. The criticism on Eli is based on that we don't have a line to protect them. Our running is not effective because we don't have a line to block for them. If we fix the line, two free agents, offensive linemen. When you were with Paul the other day, I agree with Paulie, but I agree with you also. We have to be thinking about next year, which is what Reese does every year. He thinks about who he's going to lose and who we're going to pick to replace him just in case we do. That being said, we might pick Justin Gilbert, the corner, just in case Prince cut out. Now, I'll be thinking about signing Prince now and see what JPP proves during the course of the season. Is he going to live up to his potential, or is he a bust?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing about it, Rolando. I think it's interesting you bring this up. I think there's a much better chance of Prince coming back, but I think the Giants might worry about replacing a pass rusher this year. You know, what happens if Justin Tuck leaves? JPP is a free agent next year. I mean, don't you almost have to at some point draft a defensive end in this draft to prepare for the possibility that JPP walks out the door next year?
No, I would sign a free agent.
Okay.
I would try to make a big splash in signing one of these big free agents where if he does leave, we have somebody. We still, in drafting a defensive end, is still an unproven commodity, which we already have on our roster with Moore. We got to wait until Moore develops. That's why we drafted him third. If he can develop, you know, physically, gain some more weight so he can prove that he's a pass rusher.
That's a fair point.
But that being said, bro, we need to be able to fix the line. When we fix the line, if you look at the free agent list, there's a lot. You said yesterday that there's not a possibility of not cutting Antro. If you look at the market and how many safety there's no one out there who's going to make $9 million.
Well, that's the thing. Well, look, I don't think he's going to make $9 million this year, Orlando. I think they're going to extend him and reduce that cap number. I think that's a much better solution than just cutting him and letting him go. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, Johnny, I do everything you do, bro. Every night and every morning, I wake up, I run through the whole roster. Who can I cut? Who can I not cut? Let me ask you this. This one has been like my pet peeve. If and when Snead comes back, who's going to touch him on his shoulder and say, Snead, you don't have it anymore?
Okay, I think Chris Snead is self-aware enough where if he gets to minicamp and he sees that physically he can't do it or maybe the first week of training camp, I believe, and maybe I'm wrong, I think Chris Snead is self-aware enough to say that to himself, and I think he'll give it up. I don't think Chris Snead wants to be here next year looking like a 50-year-old man that can't move. I don't think he wants to do that.
Okay. Say his ego is bigger than his common sense. Say he does go out there and play, and he's still giving in. Who's going to touch on his shoulder and say, look, Snead, I know you want to, but you just don't have it anymore?
It has to be Tom Coughlin. That's his job. That's the coach's job.
Imagine that. Imagine him saying, Snead, you can't do it. And then going at the dinner table and say, pass me the salt. He said, I can't do it. That, you know, he told me he can't do it on the field. Can't do it on the dinner table. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be a tough question that I feel like that's why we got to cover our butt. That's why I agree with Paulie. We got to cover our butt. And that's why I agree with you, Johnny. Getting two free agents, center and guard, and drafting Martin. And you see, I love Gilbert, too. Drafting Martin for security just in case Beatty doesn't do it. If Beatty doesn't do it, now we're stuck. Who do we have? We don't have that's plan B. We don't have plan B. And like I'm thinking, okay, if Snead doesn't do it, maybe we can bring that second round draft pick. It could be David Yankee. It could be Xavier from UCLA. It could be maybe in the third round. You have more potential guys to be able to come in because it's that strong. The possibility is endless, and I can't wait for free agents. wait just to see what we're going to do.
All right, thanks, Rolando.
Take care, buddy. Thank
appreciate
you,
man. It, man. Good stuff.
Let's go Knicks.
Yeah. All right, boy. That is a whole nother show. That is a whole nother show. Oh, boy. The Knicks. I've been – I can't. I don't have enough time for it. 201-939-4513. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's up, pal? Bash.
Yeah, what's going on with you, John?
Bash, you there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on, John?
Nothing much. What do you got?
I don't know if I asked earlier, and I was asking with the Quell Jackson deal being signed to the coach yesterday was done. You think the 4-year, $22 million, $11 million guaranteed, that's something BC will be looking at, similar thing like was Jackson signed yesterday? Was a similar contract or something like that?
I think that's what.
And if so, do you think the Giants will give him something like that? If so, is that something he's looking for?
I think that's something Beeson will want, Bash. I don't think that's something he's going to get, and I don't think the Giants will go quite that high for a John Beeson contract.
Are you looking at more a 3-year, maybe $3-4 million a year, maybe?
I think you're looking at somewhere around
million guaranteed.
I would say about 4 for $18, $8 million guaranteed, and the Giants have an easy out to get out of the contract after two seasons, something like that.
Or you think he'll be looking for something in the market? If he don't come with us, he's looking for something in the market, something similar to Jackson.
I think that's why he'll hit the open market. And look, I've said that there's a chance he'll sign early, but I've said since the beginning, Beeson, you know, he wants to be here, but at the same time, he wants to get good money. I think he'll get to the market. You know, after a couple weeks, he'll see what he wants isn't there, and then he'll come back to the Giants and he'll sign here. That's my gut feeling for how this thing is going to go down.
Okay, that's all I have. Just asking about the Jackson deal and what Beeson's looking for.
Thanks, Bash.
All right.
Final call on the show, hitting cleanup. We only have a couple minutes left, Anthony. What do you got for me today?
You know, John, I listened to your guest this morning. There's good news and bad news.
Yeah, exactly. There really is. You know, you might get a bargain running back. You might get a bargain, you know, linebacker. But you're going to have to pay out of your you-know-what for a good offensive lineman, and that's bad news for the Giants.
Yeah, and also that there was no tight end available outside of just the one that Graham, you know.
Yeah, that and also that he thinks cornerbacks are probably going to go in this, you know, $6 to $8 million range, which, you know, might be a little pricey for the Giants.
Yeah, I'm sitting here and listening to that, and I'm saying, oh my God, we're in trouble. Now here's, I want to talk about extending Eli's contract just a bit. Okay, mention one point. I want to extend it for this reason. We're going to fix the offensive line one way or the other. And we're going to find someone at a tight end, and we're going to find a running back. Eli's going to have a better year, a much better year. And then he's going to want more money instead of less money. While he's vulnerable, while he agrees with what everyone's saying, okay, he had two bad years, and part of it was the offensive line, and part of it was a tight end, and part of it was receivers not getting the ball, not going for the ball, all of that. While he's thinking that way along with the crowd, while he's upset and realizing he has to do better, let's extend him. Because if he has a great year, guess what? He's going to want more money instead of cooperating.
Nah, look, I hear you, Anthony. I'm not sure that even if you extend him now, you're going to get him on much of a discount. If I thought you could, I'd be behind it. I'm just not sure you can.
Yeah, I don't mean about cutting him. Extend that contract.
No, I understand.
Yeah, see, that this way we, you know, while he's feeling that way, because we keep him upright next year, and the following year he's gonna want a lot more, and it'll be a lot easier now. I think now negotiating with him, and not only that, we'll have more cap space to get better players.
Appreciate the call, Anthony.
All right, take care, John.
Be good, man. And look, that's the argument. If you want to extend Eli Manning, that's the argument. You're free of more money now, and you can help the team later. That's the argument. 201-939-4513. Great job on the phone number, guys. Great job on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. And it all starts this weekend. Sunday, you negotiate. Tuesday, you start signing. It's rock and roll. Let's have some fun. Salmon, you've been doing this. What time on Tuesday does on the 11th, does the free agency signing period start? 4 p.m. Eastern time. So there you go. Should be a lot of fun, folks. Stay tuned. Giants.com will have you covered. The free agency page is up. We're already crossing guys off the list as they sign one by one. Have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Check it out tomorrow, by the way, if you want to get some basketball schmelk in your system. I will be doing play-by-play for the semifinals of the Northeast Conference Tournament. The winner of the tournament, of course, goes to the NCAA tournament. Robert Morris and St. Francis University, a battle of Pennsylvania, 2 o'clock on MSG, if you want to check that out. That should be an excellent ball game. A couple good coaches, good teams, a couple good stories, too. So Joe DeSantis, former coach of Quinnipiac, is doing the game with me down there in outside of Pittsburgh. So if you want to check that out, feel free. Otherwise, enjoy your weekend. Stay on Twitter, #GiantsChat. The conversation continues, and we'll see you on Monday morning. Everybody have a good one.